Good.
Hey!
Is there any additions, deletions, or alterations for those minutes?
Can you look at the menu?
Hearing none, is there a motion to approve?
It's on that one, not this one. Okay.
The, I'm just wondering why we have these.
I can't.
So the minutes that are in our packet are dated 12/19/2018.
I perhaps made a mistake.
So these are the correct minutes?
They are the correct minutes.
But just the wrong date on top?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I will correct the date.
I move approval of the minutes of the January 16, 2019 Welcome Utilities Commission as prepared.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Citizens' reports. We've got several people who want to talk to us today. First one is Alicia. You want to?
Cool. Yeah. Hi, my name is Alicia Hayes. I'm with Colorado 811. Thank you for letting me speak with you for a couple minutes. There's a lot of new stuff in the legislation that's just passed regarding the one call law. And so I'm not here to give you a presentation on that because that takes a little bit of time. But for those of you who have questions about the legislation, you should have my business card. I have a couple more that I can leave here. And so I just wanted to be a resource for you to either have a forum where you could ask your questions about it, or maybe I have an answer and I can help guide you in the right way. So feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. Okay.
If I could just add, Mr.
Sure.
Chair,
yes.
Alicia made a great presentation, what, 3-4 weeks ago?
Maybe? Yeah.
Something like that, 3 or 4 weeks ago over at Public Works, very well attended by a lot of staff from Water and Power, as well as Public Works and some of the contracting and other utilities in the community. So it's a new law that we're all trying to work through,
mm-hmm.
and thank you for being here, and thank you for your presentation a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, no problem. And
is it possible to give us just like
you know, there's so many things that have changed. I could, if you want, I have kind of like a little cheat sheet that I could email it to someone maybe, and then
sure.
You can send it out. Is that okay?
Yeah,
okay,
great.
And then it'll kind of give you, it won't be all of it, but it'll give you a good source of where you could go to hear more about different parts. Because there's a lot to it.
It's hefty. Something. Let
yeah.
me tell you.
Yeah. Is it affecting now? Or?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Randy, if you'd like, we actually have for PowerPoint presentation. We could also, we have that on our network. We could provide that to you as well.
Oh, that'd be great.
It's very good.
Yeah, is it helpful? Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, you're welcome, and thanks for having me. And so I'll just be around for a little bit, so feel free to email me, or sometimes email's easier than a phone call because I'm pretty busy, but I'll definitely get back to you. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bruce Cassant, I think, is going to give us a short presentation.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to me. I'm got a dog in a fight. I've put solar panels on my house and they went online December of 12. So I think I've made about 40 megawatt hours of electricity to now. And during that time I've supplied all of my own power plus sold a lot to you guys. And in the process of trying to figure out how the accounting was going on and all that, this is an invention of mine to try to figure out. So if we could go up a little. So what you guys are getting ready to do is analyzing the rate structures again. So that would be this area right here where you're putting watts in and getting dollars out. And so the rate structure you've got for solar panels, I have some issues with. I was trying to figure out how they work. And as I would communicate with people, I would get more questions and things like that. So I kind of invented this myself to try to explain what was going on. And so I put this stuff into a packet. I understand that's going to be given to you. So I'm available to talk to anybody who wants to talk to me about what's going on when you do your rate structures. Please look very closely at self-generators. I would like to see a change there. I think we need a change there. And so as I did all of this, then I came into the thought that, well, maybe there's more than just a rate structure that you might want to do. And admit it, I'm looking from the outside into a black box. So I don't, this is what I've invented on what it should do. And I think what you are doing now isn't quite this way. So when you do your rate structures, I'd like to suggest that maybe you consider expanding it to a review and redefinition of your mission and vision, and examining you and rationalizing your accounting structure, with the end result being to make a better system for all of us citizens, one that makes Loveland Utility be part of the solution for the problems that releasing too much carbon into the environment we are deciding, some of us, is a problem for the world. So thank you. I don't want to take too much time. I really appreciate being able to speak.
Thank you. We'll keep you in mind and we'll take heed.
So do we have a picture of that somewhere?
Yeah, you can copy that right now.
Okay, I like that.
Okay.
I think that way.
Okay, let's move on to the informational items now. Are there any questions or comments on any of those items? Hearing none, let's move on to the consent agenda. Staff has reviewed and approved the consent agenda. Are there any questions on that?
Mr. Chairman, I have to find the participator voting the copy pit reservoir.
Oh, Jesus.
So maybe you can pull it out.
Okay. Number five, then. Show that Randy's going to abstain from that.
I just want to say, so I think what we need to do is vote on item four and then separately vote on five.
Okay. Well, let's, all right,
let's see if there's any other discussion.
Let's go ahead and,
Gary, I did have a couple of questions on the consent agenda items.
Okay, which one?
Let's see, the first one would be number four. Number four, I did have a question on number five. And, let's see.
Okay, we'll pull both of them off then. And let's see.
I think those two are the ones I had questions on.
Okay, Carlos, are you here? Yeah, I'm here. Come on up and give us a few details about this.
Sure. Good afternoon. So if you don't know me, Carlos Medina, with the Water Wastewater Engineering Group here. I work for Tanner. And we're on capital projects. So what can I answer for you on this?
Gene, what was your first question?
On number four, my first question was, this change order, this change in the price, are we looking at a future addition to the cost also, or is it pretty complete at this point?
This should be pretty complete to complete the Wilson project.
Yeah.
That we've gone to council for allocation of those funds already.
Okay.
So this will get us back to payment and the resurfacing of Wilson.
Was the was the original cost just the cost?
The original cost was essentially just like the pipeline and the pipeline work to get that going, so we budgeted that out of the 2018 budget.
Okay.
This is the remainder of that, which is like the restoration of the surfacing and a couple piping changes that we had. So And again, this is an approximation or an estimate. We're paying actuals is what we're paying for that.
Any other questions?
I think that's the only one that I question I've got on number four.
I move to approve the change order to the contractor North Wilson Waterline Replacement Emergency with Connell Resources to increase the not-to-exceed amount to $1,499,477.10 and authorize the city manager to sign the change order on behalf of the city.
Any more discussion? Well, is there a motion? There's a motion. Is there any more discussion?
We have a second.
Okay, is there a second?
A second.
Okay. Any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Okay. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
Okay. Item number five, Kaufman Pit Reservoir Rip Wrap Construction for Jake Kaufman and Sons Incorporated.
And I did have a question.
Okay, Ryan?
I'm Ryan Navcoat, Water Resources Department with Larry Howard. So what was your question?
My question was, you know, there's a map here, but with respect to the exact location of the city, where is that?
So do you know where the Boyd Lake Avenue kind of makes that sharp end? So if you're going, I believe it'd be going south on Boyd Lake, it has that sharp end, and then we have bought some right-of-way to extend that in the future, called the Boyd Lake Avenue Right-of-Way Extension Project. So it's along there. It's just north of the river. It's about, I think, a mile and a quarter, a mile and a half river miles from I-25 on the Big Thompson River upstream.
So pretty close, is it pretty close to the treatment plant?
We're zeroing in.
It is downstream of the zero plant.
We're zeroing in right now. Oh, okay. See what technology can do for you?
Yeah, here's 402, if you could come down a little bit. County Road 9E, okay. So we're right here. This is an old aerial. This water is no longer in existence. It's a dry pit currently. So this is outdated about 2 years, I believe, on this aerial. If you look at some more recent aerial photography, it'll show some riprap around here and a dry pit, and they're currently removing this overburden material here.
Yep.
So this little island is going away.
So is that highway up at the top there, is that 402?
Yes, sir.
That's
402.
South, right there.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's it.
Other side.
It's right north of the Big Thompson River.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is the Big Thompson. Like I said, river miles, I believe I measured it out to be about a mile and a quarter upstream from I-25 on the river.
How much property around the reservoir could we buy?
I believe the total purchase, the reservoir itself, I think, was around 90 acres inside the pit and around it. We bought some property over here and then just around the pit. I think it's like 190. I'd have to look at the plat.
128 acres total.
And that includes, the Kaufmans are retaining this little area here as part of a minor land division.
Yep.
They're cutting out.
Where do they line? What's the pit line right
there? It's got a pitnite slope embankment liner. So it's not a slurry wall, but they went back in after they excavated bedrock, usually it would go down about foot to 3 feet in the unweathered bedrock. And their purpose, though, is to mine out all the usable aggregate. So that's the main purpose of the pond to the aggregate company. And then, if they can line it and sell it to a municipality, in this case, the city of Loveland, for a future line reservoir storage, they'll do that. So that's what's been done here. The usable aggregate has been mined out to the bedrock, into the unweathered bedrock a little bit. And then the embankment has a slope and it's bentonite compaction. Usually they use like a densometer to get the density right as they go along. The right amount of bentonite with the clay materials and any native material they can use. And then it goes through a 90-day leak test process with the state engineer's office.
Yeah.
And if it passes that, then they approve it as a lined reservoir.
How do we build it?
We have a future project We're considering trying to utilize the Hillsborough headgate here for the backwater effect, and with an agreement with the Hillsborough Ditch Company that we'll be negotiating, we're going to try to put some infrastructure in here to come off the river where that water is backed up and get into the river and have a pump station, looking at even reversible pump station that could go either direction to drain or to pump in. And also potentially set it up where we got some gravity options. So that's kind of the future, about 10 years out, to look at some infrastructure build out.
And we filed a 2018 water rate in December to fill when the river's in priority in 2018, which is, you know, pretty frequently right now. I think there's, I'm not sure if it's free river still, but below the below town. But we can fill it with free river conditions with 2018 water rate. We can fill it with wastewater treatment plant effluent that is reusable. We have exchange rights that allow us to exchange it from that pit all the way back up the treatment plant for the 2002 priority. Any other reusable water that can be quantified in our lawn irrigation return flow reusable water court case, which was filed in November of last year. So there's quite a bit of different strategies we could fill it with.
So Derek's talking about the sources. I may have misunderstood your question. I thought you were emphasizing infrastructure at the time. Derek is talking about the sources of the water that we could use that infrastructure to divert into the reservoir.
But that infrastructure was planned many
no
years down.
Access, right?
I'm sorry, go
no
ahead.
Public access?
That is yet to be determined. We don't know if we will allow a public trail through there or not. I think once the reservoir has water in it, there'll be some liability concerns for the city, so we may fence off that part. But we may allow some public access around it, and parts of it. That is still being worked out.
So where will the magpie pipes go underneath it when they drill for oil?
We're hoping they don't.
I hope so.
Can you speak to that case?
Well, yeah, and I can just point out the application, which there was a recent Denver Post article about COGCC facing a multi-year backlog of applications due to that came in before the ballot initiatives in November. But the applications that are still in the process, the PAT site is right around here. They would go down up to a mile and go miles in both directions.
That's Magpie?
That's Magpie.
How many are there others?
Not that I'm aware of that are around the city. Statewide, there was a rush of drilling applications to be filed before Election Day because of the potential, I can't remember what that proposition was.
112.
The setback, the setback. There was concern that the voters were going to pass that setback bill, so there was a flood of applications to COGCC right before the election. And Mitch, this was one.
Will there be any expenses for riprap reinforcement in the future in addition to this one?
This will be the main effort. Once it's about halfway done currently, so once the riprap is completed around the rest of the reservoir, we don't anticipate needing any more riprap in the reservoir itself. We do have a proposed drainage channel that we can gravity feed back downstream of Hillsborough, and there may be some reinforcement required of any gravity channels.
What's the pump station cost?
Well, that has not been spec'd out to detail yet. We have some rough estimates. I don't have those numbers in front of me right now. But as you know, with inflation 10 years down the year, it's going to get more expensive as it gets spec'd out.
What's our timeline for getting it as a functional?
Tentatively, we'd like to see some infrastructure go in within 10 years.
And we bought it in fee simple then? We're not leasing it or anything?
No, sir. Spot outright.
Okay. Any other questions?
I move to award the contract for the riprap reinforcement effort to Jake Kaufman & Son, Inc. in an amount not to exceed $579,600 and authorize the city manager to execute the service contract on behalf of the city.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? And abstain. All right. Thanks, Ryan.
Okay, let's move on to the regular agenda. CBT, cash in lieu of market change. Nathan?
Nathan Alburn. Work with Larry and Ryan. Spoke last week. Most of you have seen what we have here, and as you can imagine, the CBT market right now is pretty volatile. It's going up pretty quickly, and we didn't see a whole lot of transactions until just in November, and then we had several that happened all of a sudden, and specifically in December, there was an actual bid that went in on 63 units that increased the price considerably. And so we have a recommendation to approve a resolution that we have for you, setting the city's recognized CBT value at $35,440 per unit. And that would increase the cash in lieu price to $37,220. That's a considerable increase from before, but with the market the way it is, we felt it would be a good change, good time to do that.
I just had one question.
Yeah.
On the graph on attachment B, There's actually a bar embedded within each of the costs. What is the recognition of that bar?
So that bar represents the number of units that were sold at that price. So you can see in December, the units that were sold were 63, and that's the gray bar.
Yeah.
And then the green represents the actual price.
So there were a lot of units that were sold?
Yeah, it was a big block that went up for bid through Northern itself. So yeah.
Who were those sold to?
I honestly don't know. I don't know if they've actually disclosed
that. They may not reveal that yet. I haven't heard it. But it was one buyer. These were under the parking rules. These were brought into Northern.
Yeah, if you look at the actual auction results, I think this is also another good indicator of the price of CBT and how much people are willing to pay. Because even though that was the highest bid, there were several bids right underneath it that were very close to it. So it's definitely a high-priced commodity right now.
So there was a single purchaser for that quantity of units?
Correct, yeah.
Was it a municipal purchaser?
Yeah, it didn't say. I'm guessing it is because, you know, but that's just a guess.
Who do we track this with? The costs, the prices?
Oh, we have, you're talking about the Stratacon reports? Yeah, we do two things. We look at Northern site. They actually publish this on their site. And then we also have a report called a Stratacon report, where they do a market analysis and they look at the costs and the different transactions that have happened. Some just go for actual tap fees within, or taps within the different communities around. And so we don't actually see prices, but the ones that we see the prices, they get figured into these costs.
Gene was first. Gene, you go first.
So at that price, do we still have interest in the city in trying to purchase CBT units?
Well, I would hope so, but it's not. I don't think so.
I mean, currently, right now, obviously our focus is on the Windy Gap firming project. But there's, you know, I think we often qualify that if we see something that's well below market price, that's certainly open to consideration.
I think what Gene's asking is, are we ever going to buy another share of CBT lot?
I don't know if I could say one way or the other.
Do we have any coming into our coffers? Do we have developers that are bringing any CBT water to us?
We haven't. And the last transaction the council saw was there. Not the council, well, both the council and the commission saw, was the stuff for Sylvandale.
Yes.
That was those 12 units. And we have, there's some other, you know, people that come in asking about augmentation, and so it's always a possibility.
And let's see if I remember, my memory serves me. I think we had 12,190, and then with Silvendale's 12 shares, then we have 12,000.
I think the 12,190 is with Silvendale's 12. We had 12,178 prior to that.
Okay.
So yeah, good memory though.
So procedurally, we are the final action on this?
Yes, you are.
And then this takes effect today?
Immediately, yep.
So my question is, are there people in the pipeline now that are looking at paying cash in lieu to satisfy their requirements, and what type of notice are they getting, if any, that there's going to be this increase relative to their performance and so forth?
So anytime that I'm typically the person who invoices for different developments and stuff coming in, and there's a qualification statement within that invoice that price may always go up, and sometimes invoices will sit for years before they get paid, and so we have that specific language, you know, and the attorney is kind of checked to make sure that that seems reasonable. So we don't actually send out a separate notification saying this has gone up, although word of mouth, it's definitely already gone out.
Go ahead and give up Cam whenever you're done.
Sure, go ahead.
I received an email this morning from the McWinney Corporation asking about this and acknowledging or stating that they thought that, you know, that as these costs increase, as these prices increase, that increases the cost of development, which I did acknowledge. I said we do have other programs that will lessen the impact, such as the Hydrozone program for certain developments, but we don't have anything comparable for a single-family home, or if someone was to do a development of just single-family homes without an HOA common area. The Hydrozone is for multifamily units, for HOAs, for things like that. So the word gets out rather quickly into the development community, and so I don't know that we do have a dedicated mechanism for advising folks that are in the pipeline, but I would think that if we were in direct negotiations with anybody, we would certainly contact them. But I'm not aware of anything that's pending immediately as far as development.
Yeah, and any invoices I issue now, I certainly put the...
It is such a significant increase.
It is. It's
the greatest we've ever had as a percentage.
Right.
Does it affect your raw water, your storage, or your water bank? Is it going to affect any of those rates? No?
So those...
Indirectly?
To answer that question, okay. So those are not directly impacted, but right. Indirectly they likely will be, and they'll increase, but that's negotiated between the individual parties within the water bank.
This isn't Loveland doing it, this is a marketing piece. Everyone else is going to be paying the same thing for development. We got it. I mean, there's a lot of implied things when the market goes up like that.
Right.
Like you may be running out of water.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. This isn't just a Loveland,
yeah, this isn't a Loveland
arbitrary no. Kind of shot in the dark. It's you know, we analyze the amounts and we based it on that, and then obviously the commission makes the ultimate decision.
Let's hope our shipping hollow project goes through.
I think we have to be a little bit careful that somebody thinks that we're gouging when it's a market condition. And it's not,
yeah,
gouging.
Right.
And I made that very clear this morning to them, that this is strictly market driven. This is not a administrative action.
I have a question that we may have discussed this before, and I forgot it, which is not unusual anymore. But so when we take,
I don't think you forget anything.
I just checked 12 times to make sure my pants are zipped. So this is an affirm yield price that we're talking, right? Because the average firm yield is 50%. So
correct.
When we take money, so if someone does someone bring us shares in instead of cash, that's got up, and we know we're getting 100% of that acre fee. Compared to here, we're really only on the average going to get 60%.
So that's a good question. So currently, you're absolutely right. So right now, we basically honor one-for-one with CBT. So if somebody brought in CBT and they dedicated it directly to a property, we'd give them 1 acre foot for that unit.
4 acre foot.
For that CBT. However, there is a part in Title 19 that does need to be aware of, that currently, because of how we use this, that the number that I give you here, that $35,440, is divided by one. So it doesn't do anything. But in the future, that may be divided by what we figure out the yield is for the CBT units. Currently, it's 100%, but we've looked at the raw water master plan, and all of you saw that presentation on that, and that was 90%. A lot of cities use 70%, and then, like you say, firm yield is 50%. So at that point, that could raise the price considerably, and that's something that the commission will probably need to decide at that moment, you know, on how they want to address that one when that comes up. Is that accurate, Larry?
What percent of is cash in lieu compared to that if they bring water rights in? Do you have any?
How many people bring cash in lieu? I would say currently, this is off the top of my head, I would say most, 50 to 75% of the transactions are water bank transactions.
A water bank?
So roughly 25 to 50 are cash in lieu. The big transactions are almost all water bank, because that's usually quite a bit less. Quick transactions where somebody just wants to quickly pay their water rights, less than like an acre foot, those are more often cash in.
The water bank still has over 1,000 acre feet available in it that can be bought and sold.
Right.
Well over 1,000. And so people make or negotiate deals between themselves.
Right.
And often they have to pay the storage fee in addition, but they take that into account.
And there's two categories in our water bank. We have a native portion, and we have a cash credit portion. And cash credit includes CBT as well. And currently, we're down to very few people that still have, that are interested in selling in that cash credit category. I'm guessing that once the price goes up, if it does tonight, then we might see more people get on that list, because there's still cash credits within the water bank. So hopefully that answered your question.
Cash and lieu funds go into the raw water fund, is that where they go? For future raw water purchases?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are several things that go into that. That's a big
one. Clarification on Larry's comment, the 1,000 acre feet equivalent, is that CBT units alone, or is that?
No,
that's
we're talking about ditch rights.
Raw water or CBT, native water rights or CBT.
Aggregate. It's a little bit of everything. It's just water that hasn't been dedicated yet somewhere.
Okay,
thanks. Okay. You know, with the cost of things today, I had to reflect back to the 1980s when we purchased for HP the entire Chimney Hollow site from Lyman Linker. We bought that whole site for $1.2 million, almost 4,000 acres. And then the cost of water at that time was less than $1,000 an acre.
Yeah, it's definitely.
So it's gone up.
Just a little bit. Yeah, and the other graph that you were included on, you can see over the years and the huge spike that's happened basically since after the recession and the housing crunch kind of got over. It just continues to escalate. Any other questions?
Thank you.
I move to approve Resolution R-01-2019U, setting the city's recognized current CBT market value at $35,444 per unit. This will result in a revised cash in lieu price of $37,220 per acre foot after adding the required 5%.
Second. Any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay.
Of course, just an addition. How often do we do this review?
The LUC has been given, or has given us kind of the encouragement.
Direction.
Direction, thank you. To anytime that it increases or decreases by 5%, that we bring it to you. And the spike right there in November and December kind of, like all of a sudden, made it very apparent.
I told Joe that in 2014, we were issued a training manual guide by Greg Dewey. And would you be interested in maybe seeing an update of that guide so that we talk about raw water?
Do you know which different board we're talking about that we could update that?
I'll have to call Greg and see what you're talking about.
I'll bring it in.
Sure, if there's something we can update, we'd be happy to.
We haven't talked to Greg for a while.
Call him in. Let's give him a holler then.
I will.
Yeah, let's do that. As if you guys want to. You want to learn an update on that? I'd like an update. Well, I'll bring him a short to you.
That'd be great.
All right, let's move on to staff reports. Number seven. Yeah, we're going to pull number seven. Joe's going to tell us.
My apologies. The material components of both of all of the changes to the organic contract and the power supply agreement have not changed, and they will not change. What was going to be required this afternoon was to ask you to approve an entire document, and that document as of about 2 hours ago was still not ready. There were some changes into the introductory materials, the whereases, but from a material standpoint, nothing was going to change. But since you have to approve the document, the documents weren't ready, I will bring them back next month, and then they will go to City Council sometime then in April, whatever works out on the regular meeting. So my apologies, but yeah, there was some wordsmithing going on.
Any questions?
Well, is attachment B, that the one about, I still a little nervous, and I don't know if it's changing on Joe, but on attachment B, which talks about if either the city starts generating with more solar farms, or we would pick up a lot more self-gens, the limit there sounds a little restrictive to me. And I realize, I guess there's a window there of negotiation. Are we really comfortable with that?
Yes, I think we are, and I'll explain why, Larry. First of all, there are no restrictions on behind-the-meter generation. So if Walmart wants to come in, and let's say Walmart Distribution Center wants to come in and put a huge, there are no restrictions. Where the all requirements, and that's the term that they use, is the all requirements. In other words, when City of Loveland buys power, we are mandated to buy from PRPA at the maximum being 1% of our load. We negotiated in excess of that for the 3-megawatt solar facility at Foothills after the flood. So we can enter into negotiations if we decide as a city to go forward on some kind of an alternative energy solution. So this does not restrict individual customers from self-gen. It literally talks to the city about, and I don't think that given the costs of what PRPA can do at a wholesale level versus what we could do on an individual level, I think it would be really hard for us to come up with a project that would make sense to us financially that we couldn't beat by going to PRPA for their wholesale prices. One of the reasons that we were able to do Foothills was because of a FEMA grant. Otherwise, financially, that would not have been sustainable. So I don't think it puts a constraint on a go-forward basis.
Okay.
I also had a question on attachment B. It says that the goal was to become 100% carbon, non-carbon by 2030. And in doing so, the board recognized that distributed generation will be required. Can we define distributed generation?
Two things. That's one of the whereases that's being changed.
Okay.
First off, that the verbiage there is one of the ones that are being modified today. Distributed, it refers to rooftop solar that Bruce was talking about, or if folks invest in storage technologies, batteries. I doubt that anybody's going to put up an individual wind turbine, but theoretically, if it gets through code and planning, that's a possibility. But it's anything that is not a centrally located generating unit.
Is that really a realistic goal to become non-carbon by 2030?
If you look, you'll see that there are 9 caveats that follow the resource. They're pretty significant, and they're basically a lot of things are going to happen for that to be true, technologically, and from a market standpoint too. The Platte River Power was trying, along with several other providers in the region, was trying to get into the Southwest Power Pool, which is a regional transmission organization, which would then allow greater utilization of what now we're calling intermittent resources, intermittent being wind and solar. It would allow greater utilization, but when Xcel pulled out, those negotiations essentially collapsed. They're still looking to a number of other authorities that would allow that to occur. It's all very evolutionary.
Any other questions?
Yeah. We've got here what he talks about, going back to what we talked about, 1,000 kilowatts of power that the city can generate at home.
Well, we've already exceeded our peak in. What did we pull? 164 megawatts last year. It was 163.54 megawatts. We get one, that's 1.63. We're already generating 3 megawatts out at the foothills.
It still says we're generating 1,000 kilowatts.
That's what
it shouldn't that be what we've already set up with them at 3 megawatts?
Which page?
It's on page 2 of 10, enclosure 7. Did break his bottom paragraph.
Hang on.
It's the greater of 1,000% of the people. The greater.
Oh, let's see. Okay, Loveland shall have the right to continue to generate to the extent of the plan. That's a really good question, and I think it may, I don't have an answer for that. It seems to look to the situation prior to the installation of foothills. I've been paying a lot of attention down to the red line down there, about the 120%. I did not really.
But doesn't the 1% of the people own, doesn't that?
I'm sorry, say again, please.
It's the greater of the 1,000 kilowatt or 1%
of the
1.6 megawatts.
Let me.
That's a negotiation.
It's about the sales and purchase in the power supply agreement, and it does sound like the tenses on some of the things are wrong.
So we were grandfathered in our original hydro plant.
Right. 1 megawatt, essentially.
It was 900 kW. And that was because that was what was in place prior to the formation of Platte River. And then they went ahead and granted that as part of the one. So we have that grandfathered plus the 1% for our foothills. That 1% will continue to increase over time.
As up to 163.54 now is our last peak.
Correct. So right now it's about half a megawatt that we're paying the funny tariff on, and that will slowly decrease over time as the system grows and our peak increases.
I guess my concern is, why don't we have that written in here already?
I think it's referring back to what was grandfathered in, and because we have a separate agreement with them for that particular site that references our 1% plus our grandfathered in, which is in the organic contract. So they're not trying to go back, they're trying to just keep everything referenced as it was from the original.
And I think that was one of the points that was made pretty clear by PRPA, is that should one of the owner cities come up with some kind of a power generation scheme where it would exceed that 1% that they would enter into negotiations with PRPA. So while it's a constraint that's in there, it's one that was put in primarily for the bonding agencies, because that's what the reason for the all requirements was. If you're going to go out for bonds, the only thing that's going to support those bonds are revenues. So they want to, the bonding agencies want to be sure that the revenues are there. That's hence the all requirements. But I will clarify the verbiage on that. It is a little confusing, John. I get you.
The whole paragraph really is specifically about Loveland and what
yeah.
we do with
well, this is our power supply agreement. There are four of these, with one of these with each of the four cities.
Okay. And I know that in the past they have tried to be very careful about what they're actually referencing. So the historical units that were in place prior to the formation of Platte River, that doesn't change because those were fixed in time. But going forward, you know, we had the flood. So that was formed in 74. We had the flood in 76. And so then we rebuilt the power plant. And then that got wiped out in the 2013 flood. And so then we rebuilt the solar facility. So the quantity of generation hasn't changed. But the references, they didn't want to reference any one generation source so that it was more usable for us going forward. So if someday we decide that we don't want the solar facility for a variety of reasons and we want to put up, I don't know, geothermal plant or something like that, we would still be grandfathered in that 1% plus the 0.9 megawatts from the 1974 contract. So that's why they've referenced it back to those. So.
John, I will check on that, clarify it, and I'll have a brief in next month's packet.
Let me add, on the red part, you said that there were no restrictions for behind the meter, but I don't read that way in the red part.
I misspoke that in terms of the overall aggregate size of the thing. We actually limit it to one, as policy within the department, we limit it to 100% of your usage. So in other words, that's
the supply to going back onto our transmission line?
No, sir. What an entity uses in a month, we limit it to 100% of that electricity usage. But it could be as large. There's no restrictions on the size.
Yeah, I think that's even confusing, though. Do we mean 100% of what the total generator, do we mean 100% they can't do more than 100%
of their demand
going back into our system?
No, sir, of their demand and their usage in a month.
Yeah, I think we should just clarify that. I understand probably that PRPA and maybe Loveland too does not want to have Walmart producing 10 megawatts and putting 5 onto the system for
right.
a profit.
That's correct.
And if Walmart has a legitimate argument that they ought to be allowed to do that because they can do it for 1 cent a kilowatt, 1 cent a kilowatt hour cheaper by river.
Well, our water and power's policy is that irrespective of whether it's commercial or residential, it is 100% of their usage, because again, that's primarily a revenue-driven issue. I mean, we certainly wouldn't have any revenue.
Does that mean 100%? The residential users are 100%. They could put in double what they use.
No,
they
sir.
Put 100%
no.
Better. That's what I think ought to be clarified better.
I'm being ineloquent. I think as our policy states that I think it's pretty clear in our policy. But I will have a copy of that for next month as well. But it is 100% of their usage, not their usage plus 100%. And this is 120 because this is the same for all four cities. Cities can choose anything they want. They could say 0% if they actually want it. So I will have that for you next month as well.
Okay. Any other questions?
Did we request that red line addition, or is that something PRPA is trying to put in?
That's something PRPA is putting in. To clarify it in each of the power supply agreements.
Okay.
We good? All right, now we can move on to staff reports and financial report from Mr. Lees.
I didn't know if you were going to get that or a carrot.
Thank you.
Okay, so I wanted to take a look at our preliminary results for 2018. And so looking at our sales, it was a good year. All three utilities came in very close to budget for sales. On our PIF and SIF revenues, you can see obviously a big disconnect there on water. We had an item plugged in for $2.8 million, which was a developer contribution for constructing a new pump station up near 29th and Wilson. That developer or developers, I think, actually have not come forward yet. So as a result, the revenue didn't come in. You'll also see when we get to the SIF capital expenditures, we didn't have expense there. Therefore, we came in well under.
Is that your legend there, the colors are...
They don't match.
They don't match. So
you got an orange and a green.
Is the orange the budget?
Yes, the orange is
the budget. That is correct. The orange is the budget. That's, thank you, sir. Appreciate you catching. I thought you were going to point out that they were Bronco colors and you liked that.
Yeah, I like it.
Or if he's colorblind and he can't tell the difference. So, yeah.
Like either multiple of us are colorblind or...
Yeah. We don't want to encourage people thinking
so that. Okay, so the budget was $6 million and you sold the local almost three. Is that what I...
Yes. And if you took out that $2.8 million, it would have been in comparison to about $3.4 million. So we did come in about 20% under, both in water and in wastewater, and we ratcheted our projections for 2019 back to be more in line with what we think is realistic.
So just curiosity, what's the impact of that?
Of lowering our projections in 19?
Well, I mean that we're so far below budget.
The expenditures didn't match. So we were expecting more money to come in that didn't come in. We didn't spend that money.
Okay.
And
we'll see that in a later slide is what you said.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So why don't I shut up and just watch?
Oh, no. Any questions, you're all welcome. Our operating expenses came in under budget for all three utilities. Purchase power was about $500,000 over for the year, which is a relatively small amount. And we had a common theme with water, waste, and power as far as why they came in under budget, which is because the fact that we had water and power is paying for roughly 75% of the cost of the new utility billing system that's going to be coming online in 2020. And so that's $2.7 million from power and $1.1 million each from water and wastewater. And a relatively small amount of that was actually expensed in 18. So those that budget amount will be rolled into 19 and the remainder will be spent there. As far as our general capital expenses, the big disconnect there is on wastewater, and really the reason for that is because of the wastewater treatment plant expansion still being in process, and also our new lab building that's being constructed. So those are both items that will be rolled over for 2019. And then our growth-related capital expenditures, same thing you'll see here in the water. That's the pump station that I was talking about, that we didn't have the revenue that came in. We also didn't have the expense that happened. It was $3.3 million. And then on wastewater again, we have money that will be rolling forward into 19 to complete the expansion of the treatment plant and rehabilitation of it. And then on the power PIF, there were a couple of items there. One was a new switchgear for East Substation, which now has actually been received, so just didn't make it in 2018. And then also a feeder from the new Foothill Substation up to Hunter's Run, and that has not gotten underway as yet. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Larry?
Of course. Did the incumbences include both operating and impact futures?
They do. The encumbrances include O&M capital and then also
impact.
Growth-related capital as well, yes.
Could we break those out?
We can do that.
Yep. Writing that down. There's one other thing. Mentioning, I almost like to propose the board. And everybody knows I follow the the income statements and that. I think we ought to only get quarterly reports. That's the one usually one we do. And one of the things, first of all, the primary benefactor would be a little bit of savings in the finance department, which we know is had big responsibilities thrown on. But the other thing is sometimes the aberrations, and Jim knows this well, especially the cash balance aberrations, they're bad enough quarterly, because I ask him a lot of questions why we have such variances on cash compared to income. And mainly because he doesn't control all of that from an accounting. But I really think quarterly is really adequate. It's adequate, quite frankly, for me, as opposed to I've learned my lesson now watching income and expense aberrations because they usually straighten back out. So quarterly comparisons, I think, are much more appropriate for us.
What do you think, Jim?
He may be a biased resource.
I've got a question regarding your input. What do you think the city would think would be appropriate in terms of reporting frequency?
Well, I know that the city council receives the monthly snapshot in their packets. So it's, you know, I'm fine either way.
So you got to do the work anyway. So.
Well, we do put the financials together, you know, for internal purposes, as well as the LUC packet each month. So we can continue to have them in the packet or have them in just quarterly, whatever your pleasure would be.
What does the director think?
This is a policy from the commission. I would leave it to you gentlemen and lady.
Any input?
I used to come up and do a monthly report like this, and I think people got burned out on seeing me up here every month, so then it was cut back to quarterly, but we have continued to have the report in there monthly at least.
You know, I don't have any strong feeling either way. I don't look at the numbers as closely as Larry does.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think